What if I told you there's a place where the veil between our world and the unknown seems almost translucent? A place where phantoms roam through the mist, where the woods whisper of Sasquatch, and ghosts of the Gold Rush linger in the twilight. Welcome to Fraser Canyon, a stretch of wilderness where every turn in the river and bend in the trail has a story, and where the supernatural is just another thread in the rich tapestry of local lore. For the indigenous peoples, Fraser Canyon and its surroundings are alive with spiritual significance. Many sites within the canyon are considered sacred, home to spirits, and entwined with stories of supernatural beings. One such being is the Sasquatch, known to various indigenous cultures in British Columbia. The Chehalis people, among others, have long spoken of a large, hairy, human-like creature that roams the forests, a figure that has entered wider popular culture as Bigfoot. For them, Sasquatch is not merely a creature of myth, but a real entity, existing on a different spiritual plane and occasionally crossing into our own. In addition to the Sasquatch, other supernatural elements are woven into the fabric of the canyon's indigenous history. There are stories of shapeshifters, of powerful spirits that inhabit certain places in the canyon, and of supernatural events that have moral or instructional significance. With the influx of prospectors and settlers during the Gold Rush, new layers of supernatural history were added. The harsh and often deadly conditions of the Gold Rush lent themselves to tales of ghosts and curses. Miners spoke of seeing apparitions in the mist that shrouded the canyon, or hearing strange, unexplainable sounds over the rush of the river. Some tales involved the ghosts of miners who had met untimely ends, unable to rest due to their violent or sudden deaths, or because of unfinished business on Earth. The canyon's treacherous nature also contributed to its supernatural lore. Hell's Gate, in particular, is a place of potent energies. The name itself, given by the explorer Simon Fraser, suggests the intense fear and respect the passage commanded. It's not hard to imagine that for those navigating its deadly currents, the narrow passage might have seemed like a gateway to another world. The story I'm about to read is from Jeremy about his grandfather's time in Fraser Canyon. He writes, "Hey Donovan, longtime listener, first time writer. My grandpa's story is one you'll want to hear, and it's kept me awake more nights than I'd like to admit. He was a man of few words, but when he spoke of the canyon, his voice trembled. It was late autumn in 58, and the Fraser Canyon winds were already biting with whispers of winter. Grandpa was coming down from one of the upper logging camps, back when trees fell more often than rain in that region. As he drove down that lonely stretch of Highway 1, the one that ribbons along the Fraser River, his truck's headlights cut through the fog like a knife. That's when he saw her, a girl, no more than 20 by his guess, thumb jutted out, desperate for a ride. Strange, he thought, for someone to be out here this far from anything resembling a town or a homestead. She was dressed oddly, too. Not odd like the hippies that would come later, but out of time, like she walked out of an old photograph, a pale dress, long and flowing, and not nearly warm enough for the cold that was setting in. Grandpa, being a decent soul, couldn't leave a young thing like that alone out there. He pulled over and she climbed into the cab without a word. He noticed her hands. They were white. Where to? He asked. Just down the way, she replied, her voice barely above the hum of the engine. They drove in silence for a while until she pointed to a gravel turnout. Here we'll be fine, she said. He stopped the truck, but when he turned to ask if she was sure, this place was the middle of nowhere, she was gone, vanished into thin air. The door never opened. One second she was there, the next, nothing but the cold seat and the echo of a voice that seemed to linger like the chill he couldn't shake off. He drove straight home, didn't stop for a drink like he usually might, and locked his doors. He wasn't a man given to the bottle or tall tales, so when he told this story, we believed him. And he believed, too, that some folks, for whatever reason, are stuck riding that highway long after they're gone. Grandpa passed a few years back, but before he did, he warned me, be wary of the hitchhikers in the canyon, especially the ones that seem like they don't belong, because chances are they don't belong to this world anymore. I never knew if he saw the girl again. He wouldn't talk about it much after that one time. I've got a soft spot for forgotten places, and this one was right in the heart of Centralia, Pennsylvania. It might ring a bell for some of your more historically inclined listeners, but for those unaware, Centralia once thrived as a coal mining town until a disastrous fire crawled its way into their extensive maze of mines, sparking a fire that continues to smolder below the earth's surface, even now. The locals called it a dead town, and the smoke rising from the cracked pavement seemed to prove them right. Buildings stood abandoned, their facades scarred by the heat and smoke from the fire below. The idea of a town abandoned due to a decades-long underground fire intrigued me. So off I went. So there I was in Centralia, my curiosity piqued and a sense of anticipation building, ready to explore the heart of the abandoned. I wandered, carefully stepping over the remnants and broken pieces of the town's former life. The silence was broken only by occasional bursts of sulfurous smoke coming from the ground, creating a fog that wound around everything. I took my camera and explored each building. Remnants of everyday life were visible beneath the debris that was left behind, covered in grime and dust. If there's more to this story, and believe me when I say there is, it centered around my adventure into the shell of St. Ignatius Church. I'd seen pictures of its steeple poking out of the murky gray fog that clung to the town 24/7. As I approached, it stood imposingly at the edge of town, like it was watching over the disaster that Centralia had become. As I neared the church, the smell of decay, fire, and sulfur mingling made me wrinkle my nose. There was something else too, something I couldn't immediately pinpoint. A sort of pungent and rich smell. It could have been the smell of decay, the underground fires, or perhaps just my own nervous sweat. Either way, I continued on, climbing the ruined steps carefully. A sense of unease grew within me, stoked by the cathedral's silence and the thickening fog that grew thicker, almost like a curtain of black smoke around the site. Despite my unease, I made myself push open the heavy door, worn by time. The church was silent, the deep, unsettling kind of silence that often fills abandoned places. But that wasn't all. A low hum echoed through the church, causing vibrations I could feel against the worn walls and broken pews. It surrounded me, pulsing like a stereo when you turn the volume up and down. I was searching for the source of the hum when a strange noise shattered the silence. It was a deep, resonant noise that echoed through the empty space. It reverberated through the walls, causing stray specks of dust to hop from the church pews. In the back of my mind, I wondered what frequency it would have to be to make dust specks jump. My breath hitched, and I became acutely aware of the sudden dip in temperature. Was there someone or something there with me? I would soon discover that there was more to Centralia and its smoky depths than I had thought. That low growl was not the wind, or my imagination playing tricks on me. It was very much real. Here in the gutted town, amidst the pervasive scent of sulfur and ash, something peculiar was calling Centralia its home. Just as I attempted to brush off the eerie growl, it came again, louder and more distinct. It echoed through the ragged structure, a mournful cry that really got to me. It was a strange, haunting sound that seemed out of place, even in the desolate town. Then I saw it. Through the smoke, a shadow appeared briefly in the broken remains of a stained glass window. It was black, darker than the surrounding murk, a shadow amongst shadows. It was dog-like, or maybe hound-like, but it was large, easily 5 feet at the shoulder. Its lean body suggested speed, and the intense red of its eyes cut through the haze. Their gaze was piercing, forcing me to face the fear of the unknown. Its fur was dark, blending with the soot and ash that were everywhere in Centralia. I could make out bony protrusions on the beast, ridges of brimstone and willow coal lining its form, like a hellish armor, merging mortifyingly with its flesh. Our eyes met, mine wide with fear, its burning with an otherworldly fury. The hound's growl filled the air. a deep thunder that weakened my knees. It bared its teeth, each one gleaming in the moonlight. Instinct screamed at me to run, but I found myself rooted to the ground, awestruck and horrified in equal measure. Its blood-chilling barks echoed around me, but as if by sheer force of will, I moved. I stumbled back through the door, clumsily descending the church steps, and ran. I ran without stopping, not daring to look back until I reached the safety of my car. Even now, the sight of it haunts me, the Black Hound of Centralia, a haunting presence among the ruins. Some nights I dream of it, its burning eyes peering at me from the thick veil of sulfurous smoke. Some mornings, I wake up drenched in sweat to the lingering scent of sulfur, reminiscent of the encounter. My mind keeps returning to that pulsing hum in the church and the hound's appearance, a reminder of Centralia's tragic history. Was it a guardian of the lost souls trapped in the town's flaming belly, or a foreboding omen? Until now, I could find some logic in every bizarre encounter I ever had, but the Black Hound left me with nothing but questions and a deep sense of dread. I'm still haunted by the cry that might just be the wind, but I'm sure it was something more. That nightmarish image is etched in my memory, still unexplained and still haunting. I've noticed that the quietest places often have the strangest stories, especially when you think no one's paying attention. One such incident happened on a cool evening, out in Stephenville, Texas, just a couple of years back. At the time, I was spending my days and nights tending to my cattle, following in the footsteps of my father and grandfather. Out here, peace comes with the quiet nights, the sky full of stars, and the sense of a day's work well done. Don't get me wrong, it isn't all sunshine and roses. It gets tough sometimes, herding and feeding the cattle, mending fences and whatnot. But there's comfort in the routine, you could say. This wasn't just another quiet, uneventful evening, though. It was a pretty clear night, a night that would have been perfect for stargazing. The cattle were edgier than usual, though, sort of skittish and jumpy. All it'd take was me going around them, doing my usual checkups, and they were eyeing me nervously. I chalked it up to coyotes. They get the cattle riled up sometimes. I've been doing these nightly rounds for years, and I prided myself on knowing each of these cows inside out, so the nervousness was odd. Instinctively, I checked to be sure my rifle was loaded. Coyotes or not, I was determined to protect my herd. Around this time, I was nearing the far boundary of my property. I had this routine, see, where I'd start from the south, then walk all the way to the north end, and then make my way back in a semicircle. I'd get the lay of the land, and it was on this walk back to the house that I realized the night was peculiarly quiet. That's when I saw something that made my stomach twist up in knots. A few hundred feet up, there was something, unclear and out of place. It was a large diamond-shaped object, almost as if it had materialized from the night itself. No sound whatsoever. But the thing that really threw me off were the lights, one at each point of the diamond, pulsating softly, painting a surreal picture in the night. Now don't get me wrong, I am not one to jump to conclusions or get spooked easily. Being a farm boy, you learn to trust your gut, but you also learn not to believe everything you see. I stood there for a moment, heart thumping in my chest. Could be some military machine, I reasoned out loud. After all, we aren't far off from a couple of military bases. But then, was there any piece of technology that could be so big, so silent and so still? I struggled to make sense of it when suddenly, as abruptly as it had appeared, the object began to shift. It felt like a moment of truth for me, standing there on my farm. The glow from the object cast an unusual silver light across the land. I watched, slack-jawed, as this diamond-shaped monster of a thing above me started to shift positions. It moved slowly, almost methodically, which made it all the more unsettling. It pulsated softly, strangely silent in its massive form, against the backdrop of night. The lights began to rotate, casting a glow I could have never imagined. I was currently the only witness to this inexplicable phenomenon. And stranger still that it was during my routine evening cattle round. I was caught between fear and fascination. It hovered, silent and gigantic. Then it surged forward with a speed that didn't seem possible. It zoomed off, dwindling to a speck against the starlit sky in seconds. And I was left there, still and silent. I stood there for a good while after, my heart steadying, my mind racing with thoughts. I was still half expecting the object to re-emerge from the darkness, because the sheer reality of what just happened was hard to swallow. But eventually I realized it was over, leaving me with a night far from the mundane one it had started out as. I headed back, unable to take my eyes off the sky, and I didn't sleep that night. I hardly slept the following night either. In the following days, the vivid memory of what I'd seen transformed my familiar Texas farmland into a place I felt I didn't know, and that had me all tore up and confused. I couldn't help but gaze at the sky every night, wondering about the strange visitor. It's funny how a single, unexplained incident can dramatically alter your perspective. That quiet, comforting, nightly routine suddenly seemed insignificant in the grand scheme of things. Closing my eyes, all I could see were the pulsating lights of the object. And now when folks tell a tale of a strange light in the sky, or an inexplicable occurrence out in the fields, I listen, now knowing just how true their story might be. When extraordinary things happen, they leave you with awe, fear, curiosity, and a story to be shared. So here I am, sharing my story with you. Hikes through untamed wilderness are my way of retreating from life. Sometimes I just need to get away and reset myself. I'm an avid hiker with a particular fondness for the Great Smoky Mountains. This particular incident took place the summer before last. The day was bathed in such bright sunlight that I was often finding myself narrowing my eyes against its glare. That morning, I pulled on my well-worn hiking boots and got ready to go. My plan that day was simple. Discover some old Appalachian trails that were off the beaten path. I pored over maps, tracing the winding trails that went on for miles and miles. Finding remnants of those old paths felt like uncovering a small, forgotten piece of history. Venturing into the forest, I remember the sharp pine scent filling my lungs and the crunch beneath each step. Surrounded by nothing but nature, I felt miles away from the nearest human. The landscape was breathtaking, with sunlight filtering through the treetops. I spent the day mapping my progress, the old trails almost reclaimed by the forest. The day was slipping by, but the thrill of discovery drove me deeper into the forest. I was almost lost, but thank goodness I had an old-timer's map. I was also marking trees and rock formations to keep track of my path. Eventually, I noticed that a strange, burnt smell lingered in the air, growing stronger as I delved deeper into the woods. It reminded me of when we'd throw pine cones into a bonfire. Weird, I know, but it was that same bitter aroma. In the growing dusk, I then remember glimpsing something strange in the distance. Among the natural crackling and rustling of the forest, a sound reached my ears that I could only compare to laughter. It echoed off trees, leaving an eerie echo. With each step forward, I became increasingly aware of an uneasy presence. The forest seemed to change before me, losing its warmth, and I couldn't shake a growing sense of foreboding. The air grew chillier, and the burnt smell intensified. The bark on some trees had a strange texture, almost like skin, like scaly skin, rough and uneven, but strangely warm to the touch. I remember standing there, in the heart of the forest I thought I understood. A nagging unease settled over me. Yet despite my unease, the desire to discover what lay ahead kept me moving. At that point, the pull of the undiscovered trails was almost irresistible. Perhaps it was the adventurer's spirit within me. Perhaps it was blissful ignorance. But I pressed onward. My intuition urged caution, yet the allure of the old trails became stronger. Every rustle, every broken branch in my path hinted at things that lurked in the corner of my vision, feeding my growing unease. The noises of the forest grew louder and more unsettling, overwhelming my senses. As twilight fell upon the woods, my eyes settled on a shadowy figure that seemed almost tangible. Suddenly, my casual hike took an unexpected turn. Off a bit in the distance, appeared a figure. The figure was tall, appearing to tower over me from a distance. Its shape stood out against the forest, a silhouette with sharp edges that suggested horns or wings. A chill hung in the air around the figure, and then, when it moved, a strong scent like burnt pine filled the air. And what felt like an eternity stretched over the course of a few seconds. The figure stepped into the last bit of sunlight. Its skin was rough and uneven, almost bark-like, but unnaturally distorted. Its eyes had an unnatural glow in the fading light. And when it looked at me, I felt a wave of fear. It let out a low growl that vibrated through the ground. Somehow I managed to breathe, each breath drawing in a pungent, sulfur-like odor. I remember the silence that followed and waiting for what was to come. With sudden agility, the figure leaped towards me. Suddenly, I snapped into action and ran. I turned and ran, the map I'd been holding lost to the wind. I don't remember much of my mad dash through the forest. My mind raced with terror, heart thundering in my ears. I stumbled over roots, crashed through low branches. All I saw was a blur of green and brown as I ran. Eventually, I reached the familiar trail leading back to my vehicle. As I collapsed against the hood, gasping for air, I strained to listen, but all I could hear was the natural sounds of the forest, obscenely normal compared to what I had just faced. It's now been almost 2 years, and I still cannot make sense of what happened. I never did find the forgotten trails I'd set out to discover that day, and the mystery of those map-marked paths remains. But perhaps they are better off undiscovered. The mountains, once my retreat, have transformed into something I decidedly try to avoid. The once inviting call of the wild is now just a distant memory, overshadowed by that terrifying encounter. Now I stick to the marked trails and make sure to leave before sunset. That encounter haunts my dreams, a vivid reminder of the fear I felt in the Smoky Mountains. So, that's the story of the day my love for hiking turned into dread, and the mystery and wild allure of the mountains became something more ominous and foreboding. I'd give anything to chalk it up as just folklore, but I can't deny what I saw that day. The mountains hold secrets, hinting at the unknowns of our world. It was late September, right at the turning point when the sun was starting to go down and the New England chill was settling in. My team and I were preparing for a dive off Cape Cod, Massachusetts, exploring some underwater canyons and wrecks. I've been diving for over a decade, ever since my dad showed me the ropes when I was a college student, thinking I knew everything there is about the world. We had other options to explore that day: warmer waters, lesser challenges. But something about these cold, raw canyons tickled that sense of adventure inside of me. The unseen has always called to me. It's thrilling to take that first breath from the tank and see the clear world below, scattered with remnants of the past. It's a glimpse into the unknown, each dive a new mystery. After making sure our gear was in order, we plunged into the water. We were exploring a new site that day, a possible wreckage we had caught wind of from some old sea tales and sonar readings. As we sank deeper, I saw the vibrant colors of the surface world fade into darkness. The underwater flora and fauna were astonishing, with corals in bright colors and fish darting like quicksilver. We swam through a curtain of kelp, feeling our way along. Our lights barely punctured the gloom, yet the watery darkness was strangely comforting. Beneath us, the rugged beauty of the underwater canyon stretched into the distance. Then we stumbled upon the wreck. Encrusted with corals and draped in seaweed, it was a ghost ship hiding in the canyon, its mast broken and half buried in the sand. Schools of small fish swirled around the husk of the ship, making their home in the waterlogged skeleton of the once mighty vessel. It was an eerie sight, a ship overtaken and reclaimed by nature. We floated there for a while, taking in the sight. For a moment, it felt like we were intruders in a quiet, sacred place. And then, out of the corner of my eye, I caught a movement. Something large sent the fish scattering in every direction. I instinctively turned, trying to peer through the murky water. At first, I thought it was a part of the wreckage moving, caught in a current or something. But everything else was still. The large shadow moved in a way that reminded me of the ocean's surface in a storm. I signaled to the others and we gathered, our heartbeats echoing inside our diving suits. Then, a deep rumble echoed through the water, sounding both strange and ancient. The water around us trembled in an unsettling way. The waves moved as if something huge and unseen was stirring in the depths. And in that moment, I couldn't help but feel an ironic twinge of excitement. After all, isn't this what we signed up for? To discover the unknown? The dive took a long and dangerous turn after the noise. There was a sudden undercurrent, not the regular push and pull of the sea, but something else. It felt like someone had opened a monstrous underwater fan, a forcible disturbance we'd usually associate with something. Pardon the pun, fishy. As we frantically flicked our torch beams about, we spotted it. A massive creature, much larger than any I'd ever seen, loomed over our dive team and the wreck. Its appearance was startling, resembling a mix between a serpent and an octopus. Its long, sinuous body was lined with enormous, suckered tentacles that twisted and curled, slicing through the water. The creature had a luminescent quality that made the surrounding water seem almost electric. I found myself being swallowed by its presence. Its large, glowing eyes seemed otherworldly, casting an eerie light on the ocean floor. I can't shake off the image, those eyes seemingly looking into my soul, reflecting depths of the ocean that felt completely foreign to my own world. Time froze, or then again, maybe it didn't. All I know is that I was shaking, trying to toggle the clasp to secure my camera. Its beaked mouth opened wide, revealing the impressive size capable of engulfing large prey. A current seemed to pull me toward the creature's gaping mouth. With every survival instinct screaming inside me, I grabbed my dive buddy's arm and tugged on the line. We needed to get out of there, and fast. The ocean's allure quickly gave way to a real sense of danger. It was not an easy ascent, I'll tell you that. The pressure differential played nasty games with our already frayed nerves. But once we broke the surface, the warmth of the sunlight felt incredible. On the boat ride back, we were all silent, lost in thought. We were all lost in our thoughts, tracing the scarred wooden side of our boat with trembling fingers, a lingering fear of the deep rooted in our hearts. It's been a while since that dive, but the memory hasn't faded even a bit. Each time I close my eyes, I'm back there, seeing the gaping mouth of the creature and those unforgettable eyes. I often wonder if it's still lurking out there beneath the crashing waves, perhaps crossing paths with other divers as curious and unaware as we were. In all honesty, the dive left me with a changed perspective on life and an odd sense of respect for the ocean's unseen dwellers. It reaffirmed once again why my father used to say the sea is not our territory. It's clear we're just visitors there, far from the top of the underwater food chain. This experience took place a few years back. Now normally, superstition isn't my thing. I'm a professional cyclist and have enjoyed my fair share of solitary trails in remote wilderness areas. But there was this one biking trip in New Mexico where something strange happened. It's an experience that still puzzles me, and that's what I'm going to tell you about. It was a typical summer morning. The morning sun cast shadows on the trail. I love these solo biking trips. The road, the crunch of gravel under my tires, and my own thoughts were all I needed for peace. If you've never biked through the New Mexico wilderness, it's a place that feels apart from everything I know. Nature was raw and untamed out there. It could be unforgiving, especially in the summer heat, but it was also a place where I saw the kind of beauty that stopped me in my tracks. On this particular day, I was cycling along a remote trail that twisted and turned through dense woodlands in the middle of nowhere. I've always found a unique tranquility in these quiet moments. As I pedaled along, the world was quiet except for the chirping of birds high up in the trees and the crunching of my tires. About a couple of hours into my ride, I took a break. slung my water canteen around my neck to take a sip, and leaned on a nearby tree. The tree's rough bark showed its age. As I looked around, I noticed the strange stillness that surrounded me. A peculiar sense of unease began to overshadow the stillness. An unusual hush filled the air. Birds had fallen silent, squirrels had disappeared, and even the insects seemed to have vanished. The forest was unusually silent. I couldn't shake the feeling of being watched. It was probably just an animal curious about my presence. But whatever it was, it left me feeling unsettled. I shrugged off the feeling and began pedaling again. For the first time, the forest felt unfamiliar. The trees looked gnarled, the shadows seemed to deepen, and the solitude became intimidating. But I wasn't going to let some uncanny sensation ruin my adventure. Little did I know that the forest had stranger things in store for me. Just as I was brushing off the eeriness of it all, there came a deafening crack of branches somewhere off to my right, as if something heavy had stepped on them. I whipped around, heart pounding, my instinct pushing me to alertness. But aside from the overgrown shrubbery and ancient trees, there was nothing. Only the lingering. I felt a surge of fear. That's when it struck me. The silence. There was none of the usual forest noise. No bugs whirring. No birds chirping. The usual sounds of the forest had eerily ceased. My breath hitched, an unexpected chill running down my spine, despite the searing summer heat. This silence was foreboding, and it echoed the dread pooling in the pit of my stomach. In that heart-stopping moment, I saw it. I saw a shadow that seemed to absorb the light around it, as if the very darkness had taken a form, moving among the trees. A distorted, hunched silhouette that both intrigued and unnerved me from within the dense vegetation. Roughly 5 or 6 feet tall, the figure seemed to warp and sway, eluding clear perception. The shape was strange, like it couldn't decide if it was animal or human. For a tense moment, we stood still, me and the strange shadow, as if both unwilling to make the next move. The only thing I could clearly see were its yellow, unblinking eyes. I tried to make sense of this entity, but reality was playing cruel tricks. Its rules twisted in that dreadful moment. I faced many dangers on my biking trips, sure, but nothing so unnatural. I'd always trusted my strength and instincts to get me through any challenge. But coming across a creature that was seemingly out of a horror story, I was out of my depth and I knew it. And then, driven by fear, I mounted my bike and rode hard. I pushed through, my muscles tight and heart racing, with what sounded like distant laughter, or perhaps just the wind in my ears. Within moments, it was all behind me. Every creak and rustle in the forest became a monster about to pounce. For the first time ever on a biking trip, I felt like prey. When I finally reached the outskirts of the forest, I didn't slow down. I didn't relax until I saw the familiar buildings. I just pedaled harder, my fingers clenched around the handles, unyielding. That encounter etched itself permanently into my memory. The skinwalker, if that's what it was, forever changed the way I feel about my solitary biking trips. I'd always believed that with a clear head and a good bicycle, I could master any situation the wilderness throws at me. That day, I learned that some mysteries can't be controlled. There's much we don't understand, hiding in plain sight or in the periphery of our adventures. And once encountered, it's impossible to forget. Now, virtually every sound takes me back to that terrifying moment when the wilderness showed me its true, daunting face.